Okay, we have a couple other people to come up and testify, and I guess I'll have them start out and then have you testify as well.
Okay. I'll listen in if that's okay.
Please do.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm executive director of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to have this informational hearing on the utilization of polygraph for pre-employment hiring for law enforcement. There was a bill this session. It did not move forward, but we appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about why we think the tool is important and why we hope in time we'll have an opportunity to convince both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees that this is a policy worth moving forward. You've had an opportunity to spend time at the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training this session, and so you know that law enforcement's engaged in a number of proactive policing strategies to try to ensure that policing in the state is more professional. At the time, we talked about our process of decertifying officers. That is, we have a board that's very aggressive in ensuring that if an officer no longer qualifies to serve in law enforcement, that their certification is revoked. That isn't something that's taken lightly. But when officers, both police officers, corrections officers, and parole and probation officers perform in a manner that designates them as improper to continue, we are aggressive in decertifying officers at the rate of an average of 100 per year over the last 11 years. So let's go to polygraph for a moment. So the goal here is to add a tool to the pre-employment hiring tool and regimen that police departments go through to ensure that the people they're hiring are appropriate to trust with what is ostensibly significant authority, significant responsibility, and of course power to take away someone's freedom, to make arrests, and to interact in the public in a way that demands that the people that we hire are really qualified to serve in that role. You'll hear now, I'm going to turn it over in just a moment to Chief Kearns and then to Dr. Roberts, because we really want to talk about how this really works and how is it utilized within a pre-employment environment. As I mentioned, it's one tool. It's not a perfect tool, as none of the pre-employment tools we currently use, whether it's background checks, psychologicals, other pieces, they all fit together in order to help a police agency hire well. As you know, in Oregon, once someone's hired, it takes some time to take them through the basic training academy. And so between the basic training program and then their field training responsibilities, that time it takes from the time we hire to the time that they're really performing on the road or performing duties is a significant amount of time. We want to make sure the hires are good because the decertification is very expensive. We make a huge investment in the front end. We want to make sure that when the officer is now performing their duties, we don't find out later something that would have disqualified them, and that's why we're pursuing this tool as an option. And so, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the time. I'm going to turn it over to Chief Kearns.
Thank you.
Before you start, Chief Kearns, I just want to say that we plan during the interim to have a group of interested parties come together and try and resolve something. Senator Prozanski is working on that. So,
thank
please,
you.
Chief Kearns, go ahead.
Thanks for that. Chair Barker and committee members, thank you so much for letting us come in and talk about this today. Following the incident.
Put your name on the record.
Oh, my name is Pete Kearns. I'm the police chief in Eugene. Following the incidents in Ferguson last year, the U.S. Department of Justice produced a report that was pretty revealing about how the conduct of police officers and how hiring and training and policy practices can affect the performance of a police department and its effect on communities. And out of that came the establishment of a panel by President Obama on 21st century policing, and the Police Executive Research Forum had a large role in management of the panel and the development of the final report, which is pretty informative. It has six pillars. The primary one is to build trust and legitimacy in communities. And a quote from their report, which has become pretty popular, is this one. In Plato's vision of the perfect society, one that honors the core of democracy, the greatest amount of power is given to those called the guardians. Only those with the most impeccable character are chosen to bear the responsibility of protecting the republic. And they're referring here to the police officers who carry so much authority in communities. And in today's atmosphere, it would be good, I think, if police agencies were able to screen as comprehensively as possible the people who would one day have that authority. Eugene, like a lot of communities, unfortunately, throughout Oregon, has a few examples of some very unfortunate incidents where we hired people who we wish had been screened out in the hiring process. In 2002, we prosecuted two Eugene police officers for sexual assault offenses. One is going to spend the rest of his life in prison where he belongs, having raped 17 women who were prostitutes and drug addicts, who are very vulnerable members of our community and frightened to report the crimes that have been committed against them. And then another one more recently, one of our former police officers who resigned at the initiation of a Department of Justice investigation, Jeffrey Wade Argo, was discovered by the Internet Crimes Against Children section in the Oregon Department of Justice when it had been learned that he had downloaded child pornography, and a search of his home revealed that he'd also used hidden video cameras to secretly videotape young men at a urinal, and also some of the men within our department who are using the urinal in the men's locker room. And I think it is reasonable to believe that in his case, a polygraph would have discovered his propensity for those types of offenses. We also know that from some studies that law enforcement attracts good people of strong character and the right intent. Most of the people that are attracted to law enforcement are those kinds of people. But among those people who are inclined to domestic violence, they seek positions in authority. Not all of them, but enough of them, that it's a concern for law enforcement to ensure that we screen out people who would engage in domestic violence. And so that's the kind of offense that we may not discover in a background investigation, but that would be discovered likely through the use of a polygraph screening tool. So our department, we use pretty much the same screening process that most agencies in the state use. It's pretty comprehensive. We have a police officer physical agility test that every candidate must pass, cognitive testing, standardized interview panel. Every candidate who completes those things fills out a personal history questionnaire, which is very comprehensive. And then we conduct a thorough background investigation by a police officer or detective who interviews just about everyone the person has known in the previous 5 years or so. And then Dr. Roberts, who's on the phone, conducts a psychological exam. And then we will follow that up with another background investigation if we see discrepancies between the personal history questionnaire, the background investigation, and the psychological exam, or if concerns are raised during the psychological exam. And no one of those screening methods that we use today is 100% effective. Any one of them alone would be completely ineffective at screening in or screening out people who do or who don't belong in this field. Polygraph is also imperfect, which is why it isn't used in the court of law or allowed in the court of law as independent evidence. But it is, together with those other tools, extremely effective. Coincidentally, we have one of our former police lieutenants from our department is now the chief of police in Olympia, Washington, which is a pretty successful organization that's doing a good job of providing policing services to their community. Washington is one of the many states, in fact, there's only a handful of states that don't allow polygraph or pre-screening. Washington is one of the states that does. And Chief Roberts wouldn't consider, now that he has the opportunity to use that tool, he wouldn't consider hiring anybody to be a police officer without ensuring that they've taken a polygraph. And essentially, they test every candidate in four areas. And this is one of the final steps of the screening process. They want to make sure that a person isn't involved or doesn't have any involvement in domestic violence. They want to know whether or not the person has any drug involvement in the previous 2 years. They ask through the polygraph process whether or not the person has been involved in anything that would constitute a sexual assault. And finally, they ask if they've been involved in any behavior that would constitute the commission of a crime. The polygraph exam, and Dr. Roberts can go into better detail than I'm able to here, is essentially a three-hour process in Olympia, Washington. The candidate will complete a comprehensive questionnaire and turn it into the polygrapher days or weeks before the test. The two of them will then, on the day of the test, carefully go over the personal history questionnaire, and the candidate will know exactly what the questions during the polygraph will be. And the candidate and the polygrapher know exactly what the candidate's answers to each of those questions will be. So there are no surprises during the exam. And then they take the exam. And what they find is that the process of the pre-interview process, going over the PHQ, personal history questionnaire, and the interview, screens out quite a number of the 10% or so who would not pass the polygraph. People who admit that they're uncomfortable because they have something in their history that would disqualify them, things that they do not discover in the background investigation. Or some show enough discomfort during the polygraph that they realize that follow-up background investigation is required, and they'll screen them out when they have better information. Excuse me. Grass seed pollen.
Just some water? Would you like some water?
No, I'm fine. Thank you very much, though. So the last thing I'll say is that every police agency should carefully describe the character and virtues of the person that they want as the successful police officer. And then every police agency should find a way to carefully select for that personality and that individual, and then create policies for guidance, train them, and provide the leadership that they need in order to succeed as that type of police officer. A polygraph would help us to screen out those people who have secrets in their lives that should disqualify them for these very critical positions in our society. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Roberts, who, as I said earlier, conducts the psychological exams for our screening process.
Thank you, Dr. Roberts.
Operation. We do a lot of pre-employment screening. I'll be talking about the polygraph, but I think it's important to give you some context for the statements that I'll make. And that is, I've been doing this kind of work since I started with San Jose, California Police Department back in 1971. And the polygraph has been in that agency for at least the last 30 years. So I've seen an agency with it and the same agency without it. And it does make a big difference. Some of the other communities that we serve in, that we provide services to, are large agencies like Chicago Police Department, New York State Police Department and Department of Corrections, the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, Anchorage, Alaska, and, of course, importantly, for Eugene for at least the last 20 years, and the Seattle metro area, Seattle Police Department. So I am familiar with, you know, the process, the way it works in Oregon. I've been part of the screening program. It's an excellent department, and I think that it could be drastically improved, the psychological screening in the state of Oregon, if you did add the polygraph. The polygraph, as it's used in law enforcement agencies, is not like it is in court, whether you're trying to declare somebody as telling the truth or not telling the truth, but rather as an information gathering tool that the chief has described as one part of a three-legged stool. The background is a critical part of determining character of an applicant. The psychological is as well, but that third leg, the polygraph, is a truth verification process where the people tell a lot more closely to what the truth really is than they do to either the background investigator or to the psychologist. So without the polygraph in the process, you can see from the charts that I provided, and I think that have been reproduced for you, that there is a significant an obvious comparison that indicates that that applicants just simply don't tell the truth all the time. If given the option of not having the polygraph in the system, they will not be as forthright about things like domestic violence, about their work history problems, even about their the law violations and being arrested, things that you would think they would figure that you could check up on, or the police department is certainly going to check on it, but they lie about it. So it is critical to all of us in the selection process to have the polygraph there, because they're more honest to us, as well as being very honest to the polygraph operator. In an operation like Eugene, where there is what we call a hiring meeting, we go into that hiring meeting, the psychologist presents their side of what they see to the management person in charge of the hiring decision, the backgrounder is there, and the decision maker, the person representing Eugene Police Department, does not have the advantage of the polygraph. And that's where it would be very valuable to know that what they've told each of the members in the selection process is the same thing they told the other people. A lot of times, up to a quarter of the time, they provide conflicting information depending upon where the applicant is in the screening process. So we see this all the time. We have the same process that Eugene uses in San Jose Police Department and San Francisco Police Department, and we know that it is a valuable tool in those agencies. Polygraph operators, when they get an indication from their equipment that the person is lying or falsifying, or they're emotionally upset about being asked a certain question, they stop and they point that out to the applicant. The applicant can see the machine, the needle wobbling around, and they know that they have said something that has produced a reaction, and then they begin to question them in more depth about that, and it usually reveals that, yes, there are other informational facts that the polygraph operator can bring out and report back to the department. The interest is not whether the person is lying or not. They call it deception in the polygraph world, but what they actually admit while they're under polygraph conditions, and what they admit because they are concerned about the polygraph. So the advantages, in kind of initial summary, is that you're going to get a much more honest indication of the character and adult life behavior of an applicant that allows the chief to make a more informed hiring selection. And the other thing is a fairness issue, in that the applicants that do tell the truth about their spotty history may well get rejected, but we end up hiring some of the people that don't tell the truth. They have the same negative behavioral history, but they get hired because they lied about it, and there's nothing in the way to prevent them from doing that. So it is a concern. I know you probably have some questions, so I'll stop here. I could say more, but...
Okay, thank you. So I am one who has kind of objected to this. Not kind of. I've objected to polygraphs for police, because in Oregon you're not allowed to polygraph anybody for employment, and I don't like to see the police singled out. And it's my understanding, well, I think a polygraph, as far as the accuracy, the reason they're allowed in courts is because they're probably 50%, so it's like kind of a coin flip. But a sociopath can pass a polygraph. Is that, am I not correct about that?
No, I think you're correct that it is possible to get past the polygraph if you have some special training that's provided by, the CIA or something like that. They will report back to the department in their polygraph report whether the person engaged in deceptive practices. They'll be wiggling their feet or gripping their hands or wobbling in the seat or something like that to throw off the indicators. So they are quite aware of attempts to fool it. Also, you can take some medications that have a calming effect and reduce the reaction to critical questions. And that's one of the questions they ask under polygraph conditions, is what kind of medications that they take and what they're on right then. The issue of being 50% right or wrong, that's whether you say, did the person tell the truth about committing murder or, you know, murdering their wife or something. Maybe they're only right half the time, but that's not what we're doing. We really don't address that issue at all. The polygraph operator, like the backgrounder, writes a report that summarizes what they were told during the polygraph by the applicant. And so we're just using the applicant's admissions. It's just in a different context where the applicant, at least, believes that this person can see the truth. And to extent, to a large extent, they're accurate. They can see more than the rest of us can.
Okay, and then an officer who worked in the Portland Police Personnel Division told me that the psychological test had been changed so as to not screen out people who are either gay or lesbian or transgendered, because that would kind of show up as some kind of a kink in that. And I don't know if this is true or not, but they said that was why the regular screening was having difficulty picking some of these people out, because for example, your methodology of questioning was designed to allow certain people in, and then so then some of these people who you would not want in can come in under the cover under that basis. I don't know. Is there any truth to that?
I think I understand what you're saying, but it definitely is not the case. Well, first off, there's nothing specific in the psychological test, either in the past or the current, that would spot somebody as closely as saying what their sexual preference is or something like that. There's a test of masculinity, femininity that used to be used that we don't use any longer that would identify, say, a male taking the test had an unusually high score on femininity. You might suppose that they would be gay or something like that, but we certainly don't screen out gay, lesbians, transgender, or anything like that in these days. Well, like for San Francisco, I work for San Francisco Police Department. You know that, you know, that's not an issue.
Well, it is an issue.
You're suggesting that because we've changed and accepted those different sexual preference groups, that the sexual predator might be hiding in the wings there, benefiting from that attitude. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. I mean, that was the...
No, they can't do that. What happens is we, the psychologists, work with the police management to specify the questions that we know we need to have asked. They are going to lie most about things that are non-verifiable in other ways. For example, domestic violence. They're going to lie about their inappropriate sexual behavior. So we make the polygraph operator, we insist that, you know, they're a vendor. They can be told what questions to ask. And so we specifically ask them to ask the questions about having sexual behavior of any kind, masturbation at work, masturbation, sexual, you know, oral sex, regular standard sex, any kind of sex at work. Is a standard question we ask. Sex with a minor child, 14 or under, with somebody 16 to 18 years of age, if you're 3 or more years older, sex with any kind of sexual contact that was made while you're in uniform. You've got a job now as an EMT driver, and you use that role and authority in your uniform to hit on women for sexual favors. Any kind of coerced date rape type situation. They're a cop from another jurisdiction. They stop an intoxicated female driver and get oral sex instead of taking her to jail. Those kind of things you want to directly ask, because they're very hard to detect in other parts of the process if they just want to lie about them. I mentioned the domestic violence, the bias, illegal drug use, alcohol, work history problems. Applicants do not always tell the truth. They don't tell the truth in a lot of cases. Why pick on cops? We're not picking on them. And actually, in California, we give the polygraph is administered to firefighter applicants, to communication dispatch applicants, to corrections officers, to juvenile hall counselors, all of them. They all go through public safety, period, across the board. The most obvious thing is that police officers carry a gun, and like the chief pointed out, have the right to take a life if necessary. They definitely need the polygraph. The protections should be built in, and they are in states like California, where the police officer bill of rights passed by the legislature prevents the polygraph from being used with incumbent police officers. It cannot be given any time after they're hired. Never. So it's strictly for an applicant processing tool. It should be used on all applicants across the board, in my opinion. And it is definitely going to make a difference in the kind of applicants that get through to the chief to make a hiring decision. I've worked with agencies that are my clients to introduce the polygraph, and they all swear by it at this point, but Chicago didn't use it up until just about 3 years ago, Chicago PD, and paid the price for it many times over. San Francisco started using it only about 10 years ago. New York State Police, I encouraged them strongly to use it about 15 years ago, and they switched, and they love it. Washington, D.C. Police, the chief there, Chief Lanier, did not use it and asked me, you know, how do we keep these crazy people out of here? They're firing one cop after another. And I said, well, you're not using the polygraph. It's the most obvious tool to put into the mix to straighten some of this stuff out, because they're lying. And they all switched over and used the polygraph, and yeah, I don't think you'll ever find them willingly to switch away from it. So it's a great tool. I have no vested interest in the polygraph world. I don't own any polygraph companies or anything like that.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Representative Greenlick, please.
As I read the Ferguson situation, the issue had to do with both the culture of the department but the attitudes of the people within the department. To what extent would the polygraph related to your psychological test deal with issues of the kind of prejudice that was clear in the Ferguson situation?
I am having difficulty picking up the what you're saying through the speaker. It's kind of
Eric, horrible. You want to try that?
Hang on just a second, Doctor.
Yeah, you can translate it.
Go ahead, translate it.
So I'm going to try to summarize the question. But
it was great now.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine
okay.
Now.
He's sitting on the phone.
So Representative Greenlick asked, you know, with respect to the Ferguson situation and the way in which what happened there may have been a product of just the local culture, the police culture. I believe your question
and is, the attitude of individual members of the department
and the attitude of individual officers within the department. To what extent could this tool would it help in that type of a situation?
Yes, it will, absolutely. The standardized questions that we currently ask during the psychological include whether or not you make jokes or comments or in any way about women or ethnic minorities in the workplace, whether you've ever had any complaints because of comments or jokes or behaviors you exhibited toward minorities or females, or any other protected class. Those are responded to currently at a very, very low level, like about 1 or 2% would admit that. Now, most of these applicants don't do it, no question. But you need to ask it under polygraph conditions if you expect anywhere near the truth. So we do get people responding yes to that, but maybe 1 to 2%, as I said. But I think these kind of questions that where people do exhibit behavior that suggests that they have some sort of bias are very important to be asked under polygraph conditions. Right now, that is not being asked in the polygraphs in California. But because of this national awareness that we do have a problem in law enforcement, at least in San Jose, I've been directed by the chief to do what we can to make it a better situation, both on the testing side. So we are very rapidly introducing tolerance and intolerance scales in the testing protocol and working with a polygraph operator for the San Jose Police Department to incorporate questions about bias during the polygraph. And yes, it will make a difference in the immediate, the current crop, of course, is a different story. I think we're just going to have to focus more on training to deal with the employees that are there, but it is an area that can be impacted and approved by the polygraph.
That's okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you speak up so loud? Oh, you have a mic there in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And probably to you, Chief, this question. What is done with the results of the polygraph in the instance they're hired and in the instance they're not hired? Because there's a piece of paper, there's a document. So what occurs with that document?
Well, again, Dr. Roberts could probably talk about how it's used in other agencies, but it would be part of hiring packet that is confidential. We've never shared that with anyone. In fact, even people in the...
Go ahead, Dr.
Was that directed toward the chief?
Yes, the chief is answering.
Oh, okay. Can I add something to
yes,
that?
Yes, please.
The way it works is that the entire package, the background package in agencies that have it, it becomes part of the background package, and state law usually says that the records have to be destroyed after whatever number of years, usually about 7. So the polygraph for a rejected applicant or for a hired applicant, it would be destroyed after whatever set period by the legislature.
I'm not sure.
The psychological, on the other hand, we keep that sort of in perpetuity for the people that get hired. And now that we're in the digital world, what we do is we save them as PDF records. Are you concerned about later release of that information? Commissioner Springer?
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Chair. My primary concern with that is what is done with that record. Is there any ability for that record to be accessed during an investigation not pertaining to the hiring process? And just generally, how that record is kept?
I can add something there again if you...
Please.
The standard practice in law enforcement background investigations is that they cooperate with the background investigators from other departments. So say somebody took the polygraph for Eugene, it is most likely, unless it's prohibited, that the, say, a San Jose background investigator would show up in Eugene and take a look at the background investigation that they had coming to that department and whatever personnel record they have with the department, including the polygraph. It's a reciprocal professional courtesy. It is absolutely delineated that it has to be law enforcement. It cannot be that they're going to work for Boeing and Boeing background investigators want to take a look at it. Not going to happen. So other specific police agencies most often look at it. There are exceptions to that rule, but very rare.
Representative Springer, follow up.
Thank you. An additional question, Mr. Chair. And I don't know that I will ask this very well because I've been sitting here pondering this question. So on an application, any application, it's pretty clear there's always a, I'm assuming there still is, I haven't filled out an application in years, there's a block there that says, or a sentence that says if you've lied on this application, that's grounds for termination if you're hired. So I'm thinking through this process, and you have your folks that come in and they're nervous because it's scary and they're just dying to do this job anyway, and now they're doing a polygraph. And I'm wondering, in those questions that are just ambiguous, there's misunderstanding, that person who is hypersensitive to ultra truth, is there a way that through the questioning it can be viewed as a lie and it's not a lie, it's a lie, it's a person stumbling over themselves being ultra sensitive to truth? Am I making mm-hmm. that remotely clear?
Yes,
you are. And and again, I see it in polygraph reports that once again, the critical thing is what they actually admit to during the polygraph process. The questions actually are pretty clear and specific. They are not ambiguous. They will ask, you know, for example, how many times in your life did you use marijuana? And as they answer, if they have a problem answering it because they're nervous or because they just don't remember very well. The polygraph operator will help them by saying, well, how often did you use it during the period you used it? Well, once a week. Well, then that's 50 times a year. Does that sound right? And you used it for 2 years, that's 100 times. Is that right? And so they'll go through with them until they finally settle on a particular answer. But it's the answer that they settle on that the administration looks at, not whether or not they seem to be lying. So if they didn't admit to it, then it's not a piece of data that can be used in making a hiring decision. You know, there's plenty of room. The polygraph operator is just like it's another source of data, and it's the department's responsibility to use that in whatever way they wish. It is actually a tremendous aid to the psychologist because lots of applicants do just what you said. They want the job very much. What we call fake good. And they can do that to the extent that they make the psychological profile almost useless because they deny normal negative things that everybody does. You know, like your manners are not as good at home as in public. Well, most people aren't, but they'll say that they are. You know, I mean, things that there's no reason not to admit it. But the polygraph, because it's there, they can rule out some of the concerns based on psychological test results. So the psych test results may say this person has poor impulse control, are emotionally immature, they're prone to act out. So we're concerned about them. But when the polygraph comes back and says that there is no evidence that they've ever struck anybody, they've never been in a fight, they haven't hit a romantic partner, they've basically been straight and narrow the whole time, then the psychological is much more likely to be a pass and a good one than if we did not have that polygraph in the information. So when we err, when we make a mistake, we always make, if we're going to make a decision that's negative, it's going to have a negative impact, we are much more concerned about making a mistake that hurts the public or hurts the department than we are the applicant. And the polygraph allows us to give a better, fairer shake to the applicant that happens to be, you know, the decent applicant, but maybe they don't test as well on the psych or something.
Mr. Chair, no follow-up, but thank you. I think the chief had something to add there, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
That was a long time ago. I'm not sure I can get back to that. What I was going to say is that we hold those packets pretty carefully. We don't allow the Register Guard, for instance, asked for a copy of the background on Jeffrey Argo when there was no way we would release that. But I get that you were asking if it could be used in other circumstances, so I think Dr. Roberts answered that.
I'd have a kind of a question along those lines. So I'm hired, I shoot somebody, and the DA or somebody says, I'm going to take a look at his hire package, I want to look at the polygraph. Would that be available? I'd probably ask you, Doctor, since you deal with it.
Well, yeah, and Chief certainly knows too, but it varies by state. In California, it's called a pitchess motion, where an attorney representing the public who's claiming excessive force by an officer, that the record can be subpoenaed, but rarely is. It's almost often in-camera review at the most, where the judge determines whether the attorney is on a fishing expedition or something like that. But they're really looking for any evidence of the history, and sometimes they go after the psychological. In my career, doing tens of thousands of these, I've been in 3 in-camera reviews of psych records. Where they could see the polygraph and the background and the psych, but they never get in depth. They never get the file. The judges are pretty good about that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the panel?
Okay. One thing I forgot to mention is that we have done considerable research on officers getting fired for cause across the country. And in California, it's... you know, it's in our area, rough numbers, you would think that the reason police officers get fired is for excessive use of force, but it's actually, that's a very small percentage of the reason. Not very many officers do get fired. It's around, out of their career track, it's about 5% roughly. But of those who do get fired, a quarter of them are for sexual misconduct. And that's the kind of stuff that I was talking about before, sex with minors and forcing women into sexual contact because they're intoxicated and they want to go to jail. Those kind of things and their patterns of behavior, that they're there before the person gets the job. They don't all of a sudden get it when they become a cop. So they've been doing something that we should do everything in our effort to, you know, make our efforts to get find that person and not let them get in the first place. And the same thing goes with the domestic violence. By having the polygraph, I think, for example, we rarely ever get internal affairs complaints about officers in the departments with polygraphs because they had domestic violence against their partners, the cops doing it against their partners. And that's because we don't let them in. We just absolutely stop it. And I think that you will see, if you move to go that direction, that it can really have a positive effect on the departments.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Campbell or
Chief? I'll let the chief go first.
A couple points I didn't mention earlier. The Police Executive Research Forum is probably the most respected academic organization for law enforcement in the United States because of its close ties to Harvard and Yale and other universities that have done so much research for the forum. And they, after our 2002 experience with the two police officers that were convicted, they we hired them as a consultant to do an analysis of our department. One of their recommendations was that use the polygraph on our pre-screen hiring, and they're very familiar with how it's used, so this isn't a recommendation that I take lightly. We're going to be hiring PERF again. It's been more than 10 years since we last had a thorough review of the organization, and I'm sure we'll see the same recommendation again. The other thing is, and this is probably obvious to you, but the harm that a police officer who is engaged in illegal conduct can do is just tremendous to the victim. It's horrific for the same reasons that any crime like that is terrible for a victim, but it's worse because the fear of reporting a crime that a police officer commits is so great, so people will endure it sometimes for a lifetime without ever reporting it. So preventing it is so critical. This seems like the smart place to do it, and it's the constellation of screening tools that overlap that make the polygraph so effective. Each one of them is independently would be completely ineffective. A background alone, a psychological exam alone, the interview alone, but all of them together with their overlapping examination of the person's character and aptitude are what will make this a pretty valuable tool in Oregon.
And Chair Barker and members of the committee, thank you again for giving us an opportunity to raise this issue and have the conversation. And I've noted some of the issues that you've identified. I think in the bill that passed the Senate, Senate Bill 316, there was a prohibition of release of the material, but I've also heard today concerns about use of a polygraph potentially in some future post-hire type of event where an officer is being accused of something and they're trying to gain access. I think those are all issues that we're willing to look at because I don't think we have any intention of creating an opportunity for these records to be available, and we didn't want them to be available certainly for release. I did want to mention just one more thing, and obviously one of the big challenges that law enforcement agencies have around the state, probably around the nation, but particularly in Portland, is just hiring pools. So our interest in gaining the potential use of an additional tool is not so we can reduce our pool any further, because right now we're having trouble finding qualified applicants. That being said, we would rather have no qualified applicants if it meant allowing folks to go through that could otherwise be screened out because they're really not appropriate to have a law enforcement profession. And again, thank you. And I greatly appreciate the opportunity to have an ongoing conversation and for the courtesy of giving us a chance to testify today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr.
Can I ask Kevin?
Yeah, please.
Question?
Go ahead.
Chairman Barker, thank you very much. And the rest of the committee members for listening.
Okay.
You're a very effective advocate. Admire you.
Thank you.
If you were here representing the police union or the officers themselves, what would you be saying to this? Any reaction?
I appreciate that, and I thank the chief for the invitation to at least talk to you.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
Chair Barker and Representative Greenlick, yes, here's what I would probably say. I'd want to make it clear that there's no post-hire use of the polygraph with an exception. And that is if the labor union representative or the officer themselves wanted to voluntarily bring some polygraph result in a situation where they've been accused of something. I don't think we want to prevent that, but I do think the unions would say we do want a strict prohibition from employers, the police agency themselves, utilizing polygraph in any post-hire environment. What I heard today also that I think is really important is that the release of this information should be very carefully protected, and it should be done in the language of a bill. So it should not be left to a vague, you know, construction that it could be released in certain circumstances. I think it would be, if I was a union member, I'd want that tightly defined so that it can't be released outside of the department. And then I think it would be worth further investigation to determine whether there should be a strict prohibition of use in any post-hire event where they want to look back at it. So I think we're very open to constructing a bill to make sure that union concerns are addressed. And I would just add one more thing. If the union felt particularly concerned about this becoming a situation where in the future a future legislature could say we're now going to change directions, I think we could also go to the collective bargaining agreement itself, and we could require departments that are going to utilize polygraph for pre-employment to have within their collective bargaining agreement, in addition, a strict prohibition of post-hire use. I think that would probably be what I would say, and I would certainly, you know, I've tried to get a good feel for some of the concerns that are out there from the union side, and I think primarily they're post-hire because most officers don't want people operating alongside them that are doing the kind of things that the screening is hoping to identify.
I'm sure that's true. Would you also have some suggestions perhaps about being a part of the process that develops the questions and the way that process went? It seems to me that might be something you might argue for.
Thank you, Chair Barker and Representative Greenlake. Yeah, if I understand you correctly, that just making sure that the questions themselves reflect an agreement about the culture of the department that's being created, combined with what is available in terms of best practice from a polygrapher's perspective in terms of what are questions that actually are specific enough and are kind of validated as questions you can ask. I think you're saying maybe the union should be a part of that conversation about what questions are asked.
I was wondering whether you would suggest that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it seems I'm going to let Chief Kearns respond to that because he actually has a department. I would say yes, but I.
Yeah, we would invite the police union to help us develop the program.
They have as much of a stake in it as you do.
They do indeed. Many of our union board members are background investigators and recognize the value in effective screening.
And along those lines, I'd just say, as community policing was being introduced, and I was active president of the union in Portland, mm-hmm. and I would tell other agencies that you should have the union on the ground floor because while I couldn't, as a union guy, make community policing work, I could sure as hell stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be great if we are able to move forward. And I know the group that Senator Prozanski was talking about was a comprehensive group, and it would certainly include the labor people to be involved in it, even the non-union police.
Mm-hmm.
Anything further, committee? Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you,
in
Chair.
Thank you all very much.
Trip.
Thank you.
Salem, appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
We're adjourned.
That's good stuff.